Hi, I'm Dr. Carrie Lam, and today we have a very special guest who's a board-certified anesthesiologist and pain management physician. Her name is Dr. Dang, and I've had the privilege of being on her podcast, so I asked her to be a guest on our podcast. Her podcast is Wishwell, and she specializes not only in pain management, but in integrative medicine in addition to the pain. So today we're going to be really talking a lot about how she integrates integrative medicine in her practice and how she helps her patients with pain. So welcome to the Dr. Lam Show, Michelle.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Michelle Dang. I actually interviewed Dr. Lam a few weeks ago, so hopefully we'll be able to get her episode posted soon. And I am super excited to be here.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a little more about how you came on this journey of yours?
Sure. So it's a little bit convoluted journey. So I'll try to summarize it. So as you mentioned, my background is in anesthesia and pain management. So anesthesiology residency after medical school is 4 years, and we have the option to do a subspecialty or fellowship training. And so in anesthesiology, you're in the operating room for the most part, doing very important things. You keep patients asleep for surgery and monitor them. And there's a whole lot more that goes into it. But during my residency training, I did miss the continuity of care. I missed seeing patients. I missed being in clinic. And so I decided to do a fellowship in pain management. Mm-hmm. And in pain management, what we primarily dealt with is chronic pain. So any type of pain that is greater than 3 months. And we utilize different modalities, medications, as well as injections in order to help patients feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So that fellowship program was 1 year. So after fellowship, it's been almost a decade, I started practice. And being in private practice for a period of time, it gets a little bit overwhelming just because chronic pain is a very challenging thing to treat. Mm-hmm. And so in my practice, I started going through some personal issues. And in my personal journey, I discovered yoga, and I utilized yoga more for, emotional healing and things like that. But I also felt physically so much better. And so I was feeling the little feelings of feeling burnt out in private practice. And mm-hmm. that was when I it was burnout for a variety of reasons, but, like I mentioned, chronic pain patients can be quite challenging. And so during that time, I remember I was Googling different types of fellowship programs or different education, because I thought, if I felt better by doing yoga, surely there's something out there. And this was back in 2013, 2014, when I started kind of looking into integrative medicine. And that was when I discovered that there was such a thing. And so that was when I discovered integrative medicine. And I looked into various, I know nowadays there's a lot of different fellowships out there, but at that time, I think the big ones were integrative medicine and functional medicine. And because of my background, I did complete a yoga teacher training. I decided that integrative medicine was calling to me more, just because it incorporated a lot of movement therapies. And I really wanted to go through the fellowship program for myself, as well as to utilize those tools for my patients. So I completed my integrative medicine fellowship in 2018. And that's kind of my long story, short story of how I discovered integrative medicine.
No, that's really cool. So you went through it. I feel like most people that end up in integrative medicine have a personal story of some sort, and that's how they get into integrative or functional medicine. And so that's a very common thing that I hear. And that's great that you're able to use your knowledge even from before and integrate it with what you are practicing now. So how would you say that you're using your pain management skills like currently, and how do you integrate it with the integrative medicine?
Yeah, so my story now is a little bit changed, and I'll share with you. I haven't really talked about it a whole lot on my podcast, but I actually took a break from clinical medicine recently during the pandemic. So right now we're kind of in the early 2021, but I decided to leave clinical medicine for a period of time. I had been in practice for quite a while, and like I mentioned earlier, I was feeling really burnt out. So I left clinical medicine in October of 2020, and now I'm getting back into it on my own terms, but that's like probably a different podcast on burnout. But you know, when I was in practice, I really enjoyed the opportunities that I had to incorporate some integrative medicine techniques for a number of patients. And I say select just because when it comes to chronic pain, there's so much that goes into it, not just the organic reason of why a patient is experiencing pain, but also there's such a huge emotional behavioral component to it. And many patients, or I won't say many, but some patients are just not ready to hear of what other things are out there to help them feel better, because sometimes an injection or a medication is just really not going to help them if there's other issues that are contributing to them feeling the way that they're feeling. But for the ones who were open, you know, they've tried so many different medications, they can't tolerate it, or it doesn't work, or it's not effective. They've tried injections, but it just keeps coming back just because they're not addressing the underlying issues. Those patients, when they come to me and they say, you know, I'm ready to hear about anything else, what else can I do? Then, you know, I can talk to them about cognitive behavioral therapy. I can talk to them about water therapy. I can talk to them about movement therapy like yoga or even Tai Chi, which is really great for the muscles and for the movement and for the spiritual emotional component. So at that time, you know, I can really talk to those patients, but I think in my experience, I have to just meet those patients where they're at. And so that I think going through the integrative medicine fellowship has really helped me, because one of the very first things that we learn about in our fellowship program is motivational interviewing. And so, you know, it's kind of letting the patient take the lead. And I also completed a health coaching certification recently as well. And that was part of it too. It's just like, you know, you want to empower the patients to have a little bit more control over their health.
That's great. Yeah. To work with the patients. That's what most of us try to do with integrative medicine, right? To come to a meeting point, and they might not go from having so much pain to pain free right away, but definitely going step by step is a very important thing that you're dealing with, I think, right? Little by little.
Yeah. And I tell people, you know, like I said, my specialty is chronic pain. So one of the things I tell a lot of my patients is that, you know, ask them what their expectations are in terms of their pain issues or their pain concerns. And if they tell me that they want to not be in any pain, I just, you know, you have to at that point, you know, kind of be realistic that pain is a normal response, and to not be in pain is just not a normal thing. I mean, if you stub your toe, that's going to hurt. And so, you know, you expect that to hurt. And so I think shaping the patient's expectations is helpful as well, just to let them know that inflammation and feeling the pain is a normal body response.
Managing expectations. That's great.
Right. Yeah.
What would you say is like the number one type of pain that you see, or the thing that is easily fixable or more easy than compared to others? I don't know if there's a way to say that. Something that you see very often, I guess.
So what I see a lot just in my practice is just your standard kind of, I pulled my back. So a lot of spinal pain is what I see, but many times what ends up happening is, you know, the patients get advanced imaging and their imaging shows up, oh, I have this disc herniation. Oh my gosh, that's why I'm having pain. But when you examine them, a lot of times it may not necessarily even be that disc that's causing the issue. And so it may be something like a muscle strain, or they slept wrong, or they have myofascial or musculoskeletal pain. So it's not necessarily the issue of what's on their image. And so I do have that discussion with many patients who come in having already had imaging done, and then they're very focused on the results of their imaging. And I tell them, you know, I've never had an imaging done. I kind of think that I've herniated in my back a couple of times, but it's fine. You know, you don't fixate on it. And so I've had some patients who go and have underlined and circled every single bit of their MRI report. And they're just like, this is why I'm having pain. when in actuality, you know, their pain is like in their lower lumbar spine, and then the issue in their MRI is actually in their higher, you know, L1, L2, you know, and so it's like completely different. So I tell them the MRI and the images help us with our diagnosis, but just because something shows up on your image doesn't mean that you'll actually have symptoms. And so we treat the symptoms and not just the image, which I find, you know, I mean, everybody practices differently, but there are times where I've had patients who've come to me from other physicians who've had every single injection based on that image, and it's really not even the issue. So
I love that. I love that. Trying to really not treat just the labs or the imaging, but really your clinical diagnosis and helping their symptoms along the way. That's really great. So, I mean, what are some simple tips you would give to someone, yeah, who might have a musculoskeletal kind of like a strain or a sprain in their lower back? And it's not like the imaging needs to show anything, but if you think it is more of a musculoskeletal, is there simple tips that you would recommend?
Yeah. So I would recommend, I mean, it sounds counterintuitive for many people who are in pain, but to move. So a lot of times what happens is that if you pull something, and I'm guilty of it myself, if I've pulled something, the last thing that you really want to do is to really move. But in actuality, moving and getting those muscles going will help the healing process. And so, you know, even if I've pulled something, sometimes depending on, you know, obviously what it is, I can roll it out, or I can do some gentle stretches. Yoga is great. There's so much out there, I think, available nowadays that's free and accessible. YouTube mm-hmm. videos on like specific yoga poses for whatever specific, you know, type of pain that you have, and whether it's in your neck or your back, mm-hmm. You can do very gentle exercises. And the important thing is to listen to your body. And that's, I think, really challenging. I know many people have problems with that, like knowing when it's too much and also knowing when it's not enough. So, you know, stretching and feeling that stretch is good, but pain is obviously not good. And sometimes that's a very fine line, and people who are not used to really moving their body may have difficulty in the beginning with really recognizing when it is a good stretch, when it's a good type of, you know, stretching sensation versus when it's painful and they need to stop.
Oh, so then getting someone to help them might be the next step, right? To get that fine line between too much pain and just stretching.
Yeah, it's that, and also just getting to know your body. So I think that just takes a lot of practice. But in the beginning, I mean, there are a lot of gentle moves you can do that will not, you know, cause any injury or cause any pain. And you can definitely start there.
That's really good. And so are there any other, I know you talked about water therapy. Can you kind of go into that a little more?
So in my training, we learned a lot about fibromyalgia, which is kind of like the disease that nobody ever wants to talk about, because it's kind of like the disease of exclusion where everything hurts. Nobody knows what's wrong with you. Oh, you have fibromyalgia.
Right.
I learned about it just because, we learned about it in order to, you know, treat it. And one of the great tools to help manage the pain of fibromyalgia is water therapy. And I do recommend it to many of my patients who may be morbidly obese, who aren't able to even do any kind of gentle stretching. I mean, their body is just not used to moving in that way. I recommend water therapy, and it may be challenging now in the time of COVID, but it's great just to have people who aren't used to moving their body, who can't really tolerate land physical therapy, which I love physical therapy, but to be able to do something inside of a pool. And the reason why is because you can do basic physical therapy exercises, but inside of a pool, which allows people to do a lot more than they were able to do on land or, you know, in general. And so I think it's a great stepping stone for people who are not used to moving their body. So, and even if we used to have it, it's funny, in my fellowship program, we had the Xerox copy of aquatic therapy exercises. I can still picture it in my mind. And it's literally very basic exercises, like a picture, like a stick figure of a person walking in a pool and doing like, you know, lunges in a pool. And it's the most like basic handout, but it was like one that I photocopied a zillion times. I even had it at one point when I first started private practice. I don't have it anymore, but it's really funny because I would hand it to a patient. I say, if you have access to a swimming pool, do these exercises. And it looks silly because it's basically just somebody walking in a pool and doing walking lunges, but it's just, you know, something you can hand to patients. But anyways, I do tell patients if they can't get into aquatic therapy, if they do have access to a pool, preferably a heated pool, because that feels nice. Just basic walking, you know, up inside of the pool, obviously in the shallow end, walking up and down, just getting your body moving, because they likely wouldn't do that, you know, on land.
Yeah, that's great. Less, gravitational pull, and maybe in an actual pool too, and less joint aching.
Yes.
That's really water therapy. So just basically working out in a pool, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you talked a little about cognitive behavioral therapy. Can you kind of also explain how pain and how the mind and the psychiatric part of it works together? What's the connection, and how do we help people with their pain if we think that, yes, they have some underlying emotional or behavioral issue?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I do recommend for patients who do have, you know, a lot of fixation or a lot of anxiety associated with pain to see a psychologist, preferably somebody who has experience with dealing with pain patients. And the reason why I say that there's such a psychological or emotional component to it is that, I mean, besides the organic issue of pain, if there are other issues going on in a person's life, it can definitely affect their pain and make it a lot worse. And so I will ask some of my patients, you know, what their support system is like. And more often than not, for these chronic pain patients, they have a really poor support system. And because they don't have a good support system, they feel very overwhelmed, and like that one issue is just too much for them to handle. And then it, you know, causes them to kind of go into the spiral. And so for that reason, I think for many of these patients, they can really benefit from talking to somebody to see what types of tools they can utilize in order to reduce some of those extraneous issues that can contribute to them experiencing such a high level of pain. Also related to just pain psychology is what we learn about in integrative medicine as well. And what we learn about with medicine in general is the benefit of something like biofeedback. So things like if you feel very anxious, if you feel like you're having a panic attack and your heart rate is elevated, doing something simple like taking big, deep breaths, like, you know, really slow, big, deep breaths can reduce your heart rate and then thereby reduce your anxiety. And the same thing can be the case for pain. So, I mean, if, like I mentioned, the stubbing the toe, if I stub my toe, my heart rate will immediately spike up. I'll feel that pain. And, you know, if I stop for a moment and take a couple deep breaths, that pain will subside a lot quicker. So,
yeah, I love that. I do tell my patients a lot about breathing and how even the yogis in India are able to control their heart rate just by slowing down their breath or increasing their breath, but they can control their heart rate just like that. And it's that sympathetic response, I think, that you get from when you stub your toe, and now you're trying to bring back up that parasympathetics to, hey, calm your system down, say it's not that bad, right? And so don't have to make a big deal about the anxiousness or the pain that you're going through, and rewire that to somewhere more productive, which would be like the breath and the vagal nerve response. That's very good.
I think we have more control over our body than we think we do. I mean, of course, there are a lot of issues we don't have control over, but I mean, things like your breath, you have control of your breath. And so I tell my son whenever he gets super anxious, like to take slow, big, deep breaths, and he feels a lot better, even though he says he doesn't, but he does. And so, you know, in that sense, you know, I want to empower people and my patients that there are certain things you can control, and your breath is one of them.
Yeah. And so having, you know, like you said, you came out of the previous practice where you did shots and meds, How do you view those nowadays? Like, and who would you recommend those for? Are they more acute, or what is their long-term effects in patients?
Yeah, so I definitely think that there is a place for, you know, Western medicine. So meaning injections and medications, but there's a place for everything, I think. And I think what we learn about a lot in current medicine is multimodal approach. And so I think, I mean, if a patient comes in with an MRI, big herniated disc, you know, radiculopathy or pain going down the leg, tried resting, tried movement, tried everything, tried medications, and they're still in a lot of pain. They're not able to move because of the pain. I mean, there's certainly a place for injections. And so there's a variety of injections that we do with chronic pain management. So there's epidural steroid injections, which many people have heard of, and that's for pain going down the leg or going down the arm. There's joint injections. There's just a whole variety of different tools that we have. And I think the benefit in seeing a pain management physician is that we have all those tools in our arsenal to help manage some of the pain whenever it spikes up. That being said, I still think that there is definitely a place, and I think every patient should definitely do some sort of conservative management and active component. So meaning some sort of movement therapy, whether it be physical therapy or yoga or chiro or anything that allows or helps patients to move. Because I think despite all the technology we have in terms of all the different types of injections that we can do, if a patient gets an injection and they're not addressing the underlying issue, they're not moving their body, they're going to just go through that cycle where they're just constantly, you know, doing medications or injections. And I think, you know, in the long run, it's really not beneficial for that patient.
Yeah, I love that. And so it's more of like an acute, right? Conventional medicine is really good for acute treatments and helping to hide your pain. But what is the long-term root cause? It would be to move or to get the underlying issue resolved, maybe the cycle part of it, or the emotional part, or even the pain or the trauma that you've had in the past. So also now going back to just integrative medicine, are there any alternative like supplements or nutrients that you use to help people with pain if they don't want to be on medication?
Yeah. So, I mean, I always recommend, I think in general, many of us are low or deficient in vitamin D. So I always recommend to help reduce some of the inflammation, to help with the chronic pain, to supplement with some vitamin D, supplement with some fish oil. I think those are two of the ones that I recommend just because I also take them. And I mean, there's a lot of other things you can do. I mean, you can do turmeric and that helps with inflammation as well. I try to, when patients ask me about supplements, I don't try to overload them with every single supplement. I mean, there's probably, I don't know, 10 to 15 different supplements that people can take. And I worry sometimes just because I feel like we're going from one end to the other. So on the one end was all the traditional Western medicine, all the medications you would take for pain. So like neuropathic pain medications, maybe even narcotics and NSAIDs, you know, all those. And so you have patients who come in with like, you know, taking five different medications, prescribed medications. And then you go to the opposite end. Now, okay, I don't want to take any of these medications, but I'm willing to take like 10 to 15 different supplements. And many of them are not, you know, regulated or anything like that. And so you kind of run into all these problems, or then you have the patients who do both, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I try to caution patients, you know, just do just a little bit if you want. I mean, like I mentioned, vitamin D, I think is always great. And then fish oil is good just with the omega-3 fatty acids, helps to reduce the inflammation. And we definitely don't eat enough in our diet. But the one thing I tell people is, you know, a lot of these patients don't have the best diet. And so that is the one thing that, you know, like I mentioned, they can control. So you can control what you're putting into your mouth, and you can control what you're cooking, what you're eating. And so that is probably the easiest, yet seems to be the hardest thing to change for many people, is exactly what they're eating, because it's easier obviously to go to McDonald's or to Jack in the Box. It's harder to really sit down and think about, you know, making healthy choices in terms of what you're eating.
Yeah, that's so true. Diet and lifestyle. And then that contributes to the weight. And then that contributes also to the extra, the pain that might be exactly building up, in the inflammation. Definitely. So I think we learned so much about, yeah, pain management and also how you practice and how you can use integratively. What's your favorite yoga stretch, I guess I would say? Is there anything that's easy for someone who's just getting into it that you would recommend? The number one stretch that you would recommend.
Oh, the number one. Oh my gosh. There are just so many. I think so. So I don't know if you've heard of like the cat-cow stretch. And so I think just getting your body warmed up and getting your core warmed up is great. So cat-cow is the cat poses when you round your back, and then the cow mm-hmm. poses when you extend your back. And so it's so great. It's a great warm-up pose to core work. And you can do that actually sitting. So most people think of cat-cow as you're on all fours with your knees down and your hands down, but you can actually do that sitting, just cross-legged or however sitting pose is comfortable for you. And you can just do that while you're sitting. And so for people who think, oh, I have to get on the floor, I have to do this and that. No, you can just do that sitting down and it feels so good. And the best is after you do the cat-cow where you're like, you know, extending and then rounding your back, you can do cat-cow rolls where you're just kind of rolling your body and it feels good. You should try it.
Yeah, that sounds really amazing. I'm going to definitely do that. Thank you so much for educating us. How do people, if they want to find you, where would they find you? Why don't you let us know?
Excellent. Yes. Yeah, so like you mentioned, I am Michelle Dang. So you can find me on my website. It's michelledangmd.com. I am on social media. I'm on Instagram at michelledangmd as well. And I do have my podcast, which is The Wish Well. It's the Women's Integrative Summit on Health and Wellness. I have to figure out a way to shorten it a little bit. But the podcast is available on iTunes and Spotify, Google, everywhere. And so you can find that on the Instagram page is wishwell.health, and you can look on any podcast platform to find it.
Thank you so much. We really learned a lot from you. And so,
thank you so much.
I just really welcome you to our Dr. Lamb show, and we hope that everyone can continue to subscribe both to Wish Well and also to the Dr. Lamb show, and stay tuned in for our next episode.
Excellent. Thanks for having me.
This podcast has been produced and broadcast solely for informational and educational purposes by Lamb Clinic. Statements and views expressed in this podcast are not medical advice and have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. The products and supplements discussed in this podcast are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. If you believe you may have a medical condition, please consult your own doctor. Opinions of guests are their own, and Lamb Clinic does not endorse or accept responsibility for any of the statements and views made by guests. The views and opinions of guests in the podcast are their own and do not reflect those of Lamb Clinic. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. In some cases, individuals on the podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in the products or services referred to herein. Podcast listeners should always seek the advice of their physicians or other qualified health providers with any questions they may have regarding their own medical conditions. Podcast listeners must always continue to follow the advice of their personal physicians for all of their medical needs.